You are listening to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. We will be coming to you each and every day with uncensored, in-depth analysis of everything you need to know to win your fantasy leagues this season. You can follow us on Twitter at Fantasy Benefits or join the Facebook discussion groups www.facebook.com/groups/Friends of Fantasy Benefits. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes and send us a copy or screenshot of it to friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com or on Twitter at Fantasy Benefits for a chance to get into one of our listener leagues or other prizes. Enjoy the show. We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
I thought you were going to say Justin Bourne. I was going to say, you don't even, don't put that evil on me. Love Justin Bourne.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Like you said, we're not starting the Tommy Joseph fan club, but damn it, I'm showing up if there's punch or pie.
If you can see me, you know I don't pass up pie often. I'm a big fella, so I'm with you.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Evan is doing great. Evan is not crying, even though we're about to talk about the Phillies. How's Chuck doing? That's the big question.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Hello, everyone. This is Chuck Anderson here with Friends with Fantasy Benefits. I'm here with my new compatriot and compadre for podcasts coming up this year, and that would be Evan Peterson. How's Evan tonight?
Evan is doing great. Evan is not crying, even though we're about to talk about the Phillies. How's Chuck doing? That's the big question.
Well, Chuck is holding up just fine. I mean, we practiced a podcast that we're going to do again later, and I'm going to get myself over that as fast as I can because there's nothing we can do about it now. But the point is that we're timely today because we're going to talk about the Fighting Phillies, who did not show a whole lot of fight last year as a generality. But they're a young team and they're trying to rebuild. And so that's going to make for some interesting circumstances, maybe some chances for people out there to mine, if you will, to deep coal mine for a possible diamonds in the rough when it comes to fantasy this year. So I'm excited about talking about the Phillies, despite the fact that we'll have less subjects to talk about than you will for a lot of the other teams right now. I mean, they don't have a single player who is getting taken ahead of 118 in ADP, but it is the one and only their third baseman, Mikel Franco, who is an anchor in the middle of their lineup. I'm kind of considering him a bounce-back candidate. Evan, what do you think about Mikel Franco and his possible draft value where he's going this year?
He has the ability to return that draft value if he can remain healthy like he did last year. I think we saw in his rookie year how, you know, once the injury kind of set in for him that he tailed off in the power department. But he can be relied on to produce 25 home runs for you. I think that's a pretty decent mark for him. Especially if he fixes whatever the hell was going on against right-handed pitching for him last year, where he hit .246 off righties compared to a .294 in 2015. Now, granted, that was shortened, small sample size, whatever. He did a better job of putting himself in early favorable counts, and that's a big thing for him. And I know there's a lot of people yelling at their podcasting device like, well, no shit, Sherlock. But you look over at a guy like Odubel, and he doesn't have the drastic splits there that Franco does. Franco, after a 1-0 count in his career, he's a triple slash .298, .396, .472 hitter. And after he gets behind a strike in 0-1, 200, 225, and 315. So it's definitely something he needs in his approach and definitely something I think he can continue here in 2017.
Yeah, I mean, it jumps off the page, too, that he had a .271 BABIP last year. So he definitely got a little unlucky. His walk rate last year was down by like 25%, which is not an ideal thing. But his K rate, he wasn't striking out more than he traditionally has. He is sort of a strikeout-prone kind of player. So I think, you know, going where he's going, if you get in a spot where you need depth, or you might be using somebody else that has multiple eligibility in a couple different spots, I think there's a lot worse gambles out there than Mikel Franco. I really do.
No argument. Is there more to say about Franco? I mean, like, where I'm trying to pull up the third baseman that are around him to kind of even have a little bit of talk here. You're looking at like Justin Turner, Jake Lamb territory, Mike Moustakas. Where do you like him among just those names right there?
I think that you're looking at him being right in the right territory when you're talking about those guys.
Yeah, I mean, I would take him over Turner. I'm thinking Moustakas. I mean, they both kind of have the same issues as far as not fantastic walk rates, but I think Franco's going to give you a little bit of a boost there. And then the one that I would kind of struggle with would be him and Jake Lamb. I'm just irrational about Jake Lamb. I tried to trade for him in a dynasty league, and the dude jerked me around for a month, and I had to watch him hit bomb after bomb after bomb. But I think as far as power potential, I think Franco could, you know, equal or exceed it if Lamb does take a step back there.
Yeah, I really think those are all high upside guys that could very well fully bust out. There's a lot of talent and ability there. So, you know, once you get past that group, that's where I'm a little afraid at third base. So it won't stun me if I end up with Mikel Franco this year at all, because, you know, how it falls out, if I think the best values are at other positions, if I need to take my shot at quote-unquote my weakest position and it ends up being a Mikel Franco or a Jake Lamb or a Mike Moustakas, you know, then so be it. I'll try and get two or three of those guys and hope that one of them breaks out for me. So I do think Mikel Franco at his age, 24 years old, you know, anchored right in the middle of the lineup. It hasn't been a great lineup, but, you know, every team scores runs, and he's going to be in the middle of most of those rallies. When they do score runs, he has a good year. I think he can give an excellent return off of that kind of an investment where he's going amongst those guys. I mean, remember, he was always a really good hitter in the minors, and he's still sort of developing at the major league level. But for the most part, I like him as a player a lot. The next guy we have to talk about, and, you know, there's only two players that are in the top 150 for the Phillies in ADP. The other one is Odubel Herrera. He's going around 100 pick 121. He slumped so badly in the second half. It looked like he had everything figured out as far as his plate discipline was going in the first half. You know, he had 44 walks in the first half and only 19 after the break. His K rate was up 30% in the second half as well. But even his second half numbers, which are kind of the traditional fear that we had for him going in, was that's who he was in the second half. Even that's a .277 batting average with 13 stolen bases, you know, on 5 home runs. That's still playable if you can be using him as, you know, a late third, fourth, or fifth outfielder. Are you in on Odubel for this year?
The one thing I'm worried about is kind of, and there's nothing founded in this, but do we see a little bit of back off after signing the contract extension once, you know, holy shit, I'm going to be a Philly for 5 years, you know, kind of sets in for him. I love to get combo guys like this, especially once like the Matt Kemp, Chris Davis tier is gone. But, I mean, he's got his issues. He's struggled big time against lefties compared to his rookie year, .236 last year compared to a .293 in 2015. He doesn't make great contact. Among qualified hitters last year, he had the 21st lowest hard hit percentage in the majors, right between Yunel Escobar and Kevin Pillar. And, I mean, Lindor was right there when you're looking at that leaderboard, so it's possible to be productive with a batting profile like that, but not in Philadelphia, where he only scored 87 runs while he was getting on base at a .360 clip. But I mean, I like him. I would like him much better, like you said, as a four, as opposed to like a low two, early three, for an outfield.
Yeah, it sort of depends on how it falls and how you put your team together and how much you like him. And I always pronounce his name wrong, and I always try to practice it, and I still get it wrong. Odubel, right? Odubel.
Odubel.
And so Maya Odubel, that's what it says on Baseball Reference. So if I my apologies to the Herrera family if they're out there listening. But regardless of that, I do think that the investment in him long term means that they will do. He's got a really long leash, which is relatively a good thing. Since the next thing we should talk about is the outfielder that they just picked up today, and that would be one Michael Saunders.
Mm-hmm.
People have no faith in whatsoever. The 96th outfielder off the board. You know, he's gone as late as pick 495 in NFBC. And this is a guy who had 24 home runs last year. So there was obviously some streaks that were pretty good. I've got my own little pet theory about Michael Saunders. And although I wouldn't like him, you know, significantly higher. I don't like him as a top, you know, 50 outfielder. When you get down to the 96th outfielder, I think there's something here. How do you feel about Michael Saunders?
Well, like you said, he didn't have a home before today. But he got off to a damn good start last year. He jacked 16 home runs in the first half of the season, which I don't think is going to happen again as he finished the year with a 19.5% homer to fly ball rate. But he was great. He had a 923 OPS before the All-Star break. And in the second half, he just cratered. 638 OPS all over the map. The strikeouts are always going to be high for him, and the injury bug is just constantly biting at him. But I think this is a guy that you're going to see, and I mean, 90, no, but he could get into that, you know, looking at NFBC data, kind of in that 60 range. I'm thinking off the top of my head, kind of comparing him to kind of like a Max Kepler type. What do you think there?
Well, I think Kepler, the one thing I like about the Saunders deal is I think it pretty much they're trying to flip him.
I mean, that's pretty
blatantly obvious, like within the way the contract is written and everything. So to me, I think his playing time is quite a bit more secure than Kepler's is, even though, you know, I see a comparison in sort of their talent and their abilities. I mean, Kepler's a far younger player, you know. My theory is that Toronto, for whatever reason, stopped giving him regular at-bats in the second half at all. When he started to slump, they must have just thought about the contact rate. You know, it was also a time where they were getting Jose Bautista back, you know, and so they didn't have as many at-bats for him. So I think they kind of gave up on him too early. And, you know, without regular playing time, his on-base percentage went from 372 in the first half to 282 in the second half. So, you know, he's not somebody, you know, I'm not betting the farm on this guy. But when I see, you know, the 495th player off the board, you know, he's somebody who's hit 24 home runs, somebody who wasn't given full playing time after he started to struggle a bit last year, you know, and a guy who could obviously really, really change his value and the kind of next contract he gets if he could just manage to get on the field for 130 games and play at 75% of what he did in the first half. I think he's kind of an interesting bargain to keep an eye on personally. But, I mean, you know, you take a guy this late, and if he really, really struggles for a while, you can let go and hopefully retool with somebody else. So, and you don't feel like you ruined your draft by any means. It's already getting tough. We've covered three whole players. It's already getting tough to run into people that we think are severe values. But an interesting guy that you and I actually mentioned earlier in our practice podcast is Tommy Joseph, a guy who I really loved last year because in a lot of my leagues, he was catcher eligible last year. Mm-hmm. He's not going to be catcher eligible this year, and he had to split time with Subway's best advertiser ever. Man, they wasted a lot of money on those advertisements with Ryan Howard. But Tommy Joseph, you know, on pace last year, managed, you know, in limited playing time, he managed to still keep a pace that would put him upwards of 25 home runs. And he is well off a lot of people's radars. So do you, is he on your radar? How do you feel about Tommy Joseph going into this year?
Well, yeah, you keep up the fly ball rates and the hard hit rates, and 25 bombs is definitely in play for for Tommy here. Other things I liked about his season was when you're looking at his first and second half splits, the walks went up and the strikeouts went down. It's just that simple, and we're talking significantly. We're not just talking, you know, tiny movements of the needle. We're talking 5%. And this could make him an interesting target, not in shallow leagues by any stretch of the imagination, but, you know, 12 to 14 team OBP leagues for a corner spot where he's left for dead. People are going to look at that 301 OBP over the course of the entire year and maybe not factor in what he did in the second half. And if he can carry that over, and he had a great season against lefties and 912 OPS against the southpaw, and all he's got to do is keep up that 774 that he had against righties, and he's going to produce value for where he's going right now.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, I understand some of the skepticism about him, so you know, people out there shouldn't think that we're, you know, we're founding members of the Tommy Joseph fan club, but because, you know, if the skepticism comes from the fact that obviously he was sheltered against right-handed pitching for a lot of the year last year because they played Ryan Howard against a lot of righties. And so, you know, we have to see how he develops as sort of a full-time player. And of course, some people, when they start to get full-time at-bats, et cetera, and full-time work, they get more exposed. But he's going deep enough in this first base pool, which first base is very top-heavy, but then there's a huge group after the top-heavy part ends where there's a lot of guys with upside. There's a lot of people who you draft and you say, oh, maybe this is going to work out. I don't know for sure, but maybe, you know. So when you get down by the Greg Bird types, we haven't played a would you rather yet. So why don't we do that now? How do you feel about the one I just mentioned, Tommy Joseph versus Greg Bird?
I would take Tommy Joseph personally, and I don't know if we're expecting any lingering injury concerns from Bird, but I mean, it's not like the Yankees have a fantastic lineup. I mean, they have, you know, some great bats in there, but I think I would rather go Joseph.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely can see that that decision. You know, I have a tendency to overdraft left-handed hitters in Yankee Stadium. And so, you know, it's kind of a toss-up for me. The other thing that's going against Greg Bird is that he didn't look very good. All the reviews in the AFL said that he didn't look very good, which I think is a little bit unfair. That's a very limited amount of at-bats after a long time not playing baseball.
Yeah.
to decide how good a player is. But people do have some concerns. They point to the Matt Kemp injury as being a similar injury, which, of course, every injury is different for different people, but that it could take a while for Greg Bird's power to get back. So where we sit right now, and I might see something at the beginning of spring training that changes my mind, I will go along with your statement, and I would take Tommy Joseph. How about Toronto's new first baseman, the gentleman that used to be with the Rays? You're going to have to help me out with the name.
The Rays. They had Kendrys Morales, but he's going to play DH. He's not going to play first.
No, and they picked up the other guy who was an Oriole. It was an Oriole and then a Ray and then back to the Orioles. Steve Pierce.
Pierce always kind of – well, he had second base eligibility, so I always kind of think of him more of as a middle infielder. I think you're going to go Joseph. I remember Pierce having some good years, and, you know, he's going to crank 20 home runs if he gets the playing time this year. But I think I'm going Joseph there.
Well, how about some more fringy kind of people, some more difficult people to judge? How about Dan Vogelbach?
I thought you were going to say Justin Bourne. I was going to say, you don't even don't put that evil on me. Love Justin Bourne.
I know
you do. I'm still going Tommy Joseph. It's just kind of disgusting to me, but like, we're not starting the Tommy Joseph fan club, but damn it, I'm showing up if there's punch or pie.
Well, that's always a good idea, man. Nobody will blame you. If you could see me, you know, I don't pass up pie often. I'm a big fella, so I'm with you. But it's going to be interesting to see how this Tommy Joseph thing plays out this year. And if you're in a shallower league, he's one of those guys where if you start having injuries around your corner position, I'd take a real close look at the quality of his ABs. Because if he's walking a lot like he was in the second half last year, you can almost bet he's going to start seeing some good pitches to hit. And he's going to be able to carry you that for a 2 or 3 week stretch for sure if you're playing the waiver wire. So Tommy Joseph, I think, is a very interesting person to follow this year. Now, you know, the rest of the Phillies lineup last year, there was a lot of turnover, the Darren Ruffs, you know, and there's a lot of placeholders in that lineup now, which makes it really difficult to come up with players to figure out exactly what role they're going to have long term. I mean, Cesar Hernandez is a guy that people leaned on for cheap speed last year. Well, they brought in Howie Kendrick, who I personally think should play quite a bit of second base, but last year he played quite a bit of outfield as well. And Howie Kendrick's certainly not exciting anymore at this time of his career. Then we have Freddie Galvis, who somehow hit 20 home runs while he only batted 241. Are there any of these fringe guys from the Phillies that I'm missing a certain level of excitement about? I mean, we have Cameron Rupp as a placeholder for either your buddy Mr. Knapp or longer term probably Jorge Alfaro. Is there somebody that you think people should be keeping in the forefront of their brains despite, you know, probably having to choke on their own vomit while they draft them?
Well, I think a guy that you got to keep in the forefront of your brains, and not necessarily that he's going to make the impact himself, but for what he could do as far as playing time for all these guys, is I don't know how close you think J.P. Crawford is, because that's going to make the Phillies, they have to make a decision at second base. And as far as Kendrick playing in the outfield, I was pretty high on Aaron Altair last year before he went down with the wrist injury in spring training. You think they're going to flip Saunders, so is he going to, you know, hang on to a ton of playing time? I think they got fed up with Cesar Hernandez on the base pass. They benched him at one point in time during the summer, but I don't, you know, Freddie Galvis hitting 20 home runs is whatever. You know, I could personally care less. I don't know about you, but I think that if I'm drafting one of these guys in like the middle infield, it's Cesar Hernandez, and it's for the speed, and I am, like you said, choking on my own vomit while I'm doing it.
Yeah, I'm really struggling to generate any, you know, any high amount of excitement. You know, if I'm piecing together catcher, I think Cameron Rupp had a good enough year last year that if I'm piecing together catcher in a two catcher league, you know, if I'm piecing it together, if I've already got Wilson Ramos, and so I know I'm going to need somebody early in the year because I certainly think they're going to protect their service time for their younger players at a minimum in the midst of their rebuild. You know, I'll feel like I could have done worse than Cameron Rupp. So
I don't know. Rupp in like the deepest of two catcher leagues, he's got the ability to give it a good jolt. But I mean, I think Knapp could easily, and Brian Halliday's not going to keep him from doing anything. He's organizational depth as far as the defensive catcher's concerned. But I think Knapp could come in and provide you with the same ratios, because he was pretty decent against lefties in the minors, and that's where Rupp was fairly decent as well. And I think they both could hit, you know, double-digit home runs. I don't think Rupp's going to hit 15 this year. Maybe if he gets a ton of at-bats, but if I put the over-under at 12, what would you take for Cameron Rupp?
Mm. Well, I mean, I'm a little more skeptical of how this catching thing is going to play out. It wouldn't completely stun me if Rupp had, you know, got 2/3 of a season worth of at-bats to start the year, especially if there's any injuries to their minor league people. Mm-hmm. I do think, you know, and he was serviceable last year. It wasn't great, but he was better than people thought he was going to be. So I'll take the over, but I would be stunned if he hit more than 16. So, I don't see a world of upside here by any means. But like I said, I mean, you know, if you wait on catcher, which is a tactic I frequently do on any kind of a deep league with two catchers, people like this are going to get owned.
Absolutely. And Somebody somewhere is going to draft Cameron Rupp. Is it going to be me? Most likely not.
I'm going to hope not, but at the same time, I've fallen into it in NFBC before and ended up with the Kurt Suzuki's of the world. Mm-hmm. And I figure if you're going to be weak in an area in a deep league, there is something to be said for being weak at catcher, because when your catcher's not playing, he's not hurting you, and catcher always will get less at-bats as a generality just because of them needing time off for wearing the wearing the tools of labor that they do on a regular basis. So, you know. But now we get to turn to the maybe less exciting pitching staff of the Phillies, and it's not necessarily less exciting. It depends on if you think that Vincent Velasquez's red-hot smoking start last year is the start of something, or if you think Vincent Velasquez is just one of those guys who's never going to be able to pitch enough innings to really matter. What do you think?
I've been ribbing Werner pretty hard about not seeing it for Vincent Velasquez, and I've been a little harsh, partly in due fun, partly because Mike took him at 131st overall in the mock that we did, which I think is absolutely batshit crazy. I mean, is there any other way to describe it other than that?
That is, wow, that's ludicrous is what that is.
Okay, so maybe there is another word there. I see it, you know, taking a look at it. You like heaters, 98 miles on the gun. You like strikeouts. Four of his pitches had double-digit swinging strike rates last year, according to Fangraphs Pitch FX. That does something for me. He's got to get deeper into games. He's got to get stretched out a little more. And the home run numbers were inflated by the end of the season, where he gave up 10 in his last 28 innings. And I think those are things that can all get corrected. I'd also like to see him walk a few batters because I'm greedy. And if that all clicks, it's going to be a huge breakout. But even if he just clears up one of those areas, he's going to be in for a good year. If you're listening, though, just stop what you're doing. Tweet Mike Werner. Ask him what the hell Vincent Velasquez at 131 was all about. Just please, public service announcement. Let's get Mike Werner off the double V here.
Yeah, that's wildly too aggressive, in my opinion. The other thing, you know, it's always a balance when you're going to take pitching flyers on how many innings a guy can actually pitch. And, you know, with him being injury riddled for a lot of the last couple of seasons, I don't see them letting him pitch more than, you know, the 130 to 140 inning range this coming season to begin with. And so that really limits the upside, because once he gets up and going, you have to start thinking about what you're going to do to replace him when he hits the injury, when he hits that the inning limit to begin with. So, yeah, I couldn't disagree more with 131. If you get a second look up his ADP, because and you probably, maybe you've done it already, but it's got to be way, way, way below that, I would believe. So.
I got you covered here in 1 second, but real quick, the one thing I forgot to bring up, this was the first time since 2013 that he had thrown more than 100 innings. I mean, he's done it, or he hasn't done it, even piecing together his stops at multiple levels. Vincent Velasquez, you're looking at the list I'm looking at, which me and you are looking at slightly different lists here. I've got him at a 187 average as the 49th pitcher off the board, early of 153. So maybe that guy, you know, isn't as bad as Werner, but right around the Jared Eichhoff, Lance McCullers, Jeff Samardzija tier.
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be a lot of inherent danger when you get to a tier like this. I understand that. I just, for a National League park, you know, outside of Coors, Arizona and Philadelphia scare me the most of the dimensions of how the ball seems to travel in those parks. And so there's some downside there, and there's some downside with the fact that, you know, since we can only talk about a couple of their hitters, you know, without having to dirge, I would go so far as to say that, you know, the chances to win games is not very good either. The one thing I do know, I mean, wins are unpredictable, but your team does have to score a run for you to win.
At least one.
I know, Yep, at least one. And the bullpen, which we'll get to later, is kind of a mishmash mess of its own. So it's hard for me to imagine being overly excited about them. And 131 is roughly, you know, 60 picks or so before I would be wanting to take this exact gamble. They get to a point with pitchers this year where you're going to have to pick your flavor. I mean, there's no ands, ifs, or buts about it. And when someone takes Velasquez, I'm not going to get crazy and think they're making an idiotic pick, as long as, you know, they get past the area that Mike Warner did. So
yes. Well, anyway, that'll be an actual like line in the draft. We'll call it like the Warner zone or something like that.
Yeah, absolutely, because that is pure insanity. I did not realize that happened, and I've been doing some studying of that mock draft, so I'm going to have to look a little closer at the people around him, and then I can really give him a hard time when I interview him for that piece that is coming up. Now, $17.5 million they get to pay Jeremy Hellickson this year.
Yep.
I think this is going to be Exhibit A of why teams, you know, how teams are going to regret offering some of these qualifying offers, because I don't really think the Phillies thought they were going to have to pay him $17.5 million because they thought he was going to hit the free agent market in such a shallow starting pitching class. And the good news, if you want to be a Jeremy Hellickson bolster, the good news is that means that he really wanted to pitch in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
So he really likes it there. That's the good news. The bad news is his FIP was worse than his ERA. His ERA wasn't sterling either. ERA was 3.71. His FIP was 3.98. Strikeout rate of 7.3. That's not exactly something that gets a fantasy baseball owner all hot and bothered either. So I can't see this being a likely scenario where I would like to own Hellickson. How about you?
I think whether or not you buy into him this year depends on whether or not you believe in the career best year he had as far as his changeup was concerned. He threw that sucker to a 54.6% contact rate, which is 10% below his career average for that pitch. And one thing that we're going to be talking about over the two podcasts that me and you are recording here is those career averages that I'm looking at when I'm looking at his numbers on Fangraphs, that's with that 54.6% rate baked in. Like, it was much higher than that coming into 2016. Fly ball rate on his changeup last year was 25.2% compared to a career average of 36.3%. Like, there's regression here with this pitch, and he struggles flipping a lineup the third time. So if he continues to have that, he's going to get knocked around. 16 of his 22 home runs came with the bases empty. And if you look at everything I just said, and you don't expect some form of regression that puts his ERA back over 4, then I have nothing to say to you, because you're drinking the Kool-Aid.
Well, maybe you know more about another one of the Phillies, because I agree with you completely about Hellickson. Maybe you know more about another one of the Phillies pitchers that had quite a bit of helium in the middle of last year, and that would be young Aaron Nola, who did not spend a lot of time in the minors. I believe he was a college arm coming out. And, boy, you know, everybody was in love with him there for a stretch, and then it all fell apart. And now he's got the opposite of helium. Why don't you give us an update on where Aaron Nola stands going into this year?
He's got to reclaim the velocity on the fastball coming back from the injury, and he's a guy that I think can make the adjustments this year for sure. The splits are going to show you that he was much better as he adjusted to hitters in the game. 287 batting average against the first time through the lineup. You're looking at a 243 and a 239 respectively the second and third times through. So, I think that's something that could kind of level out for him, and if that does, that's going to chip away at that 1.3 whip. Even with the bad whip number, you know, putting a lot of base runners on, he was still striking out 25% of the batters that he faced. And I think that's why you use K rate as opposed to K per nine, because he's going to jump up there when people are, you know, doing the team previews this time next year. And strand rate was an abysmal 60.6%. He's an absolute worm burner. Of pitchers that threw over 100 innings last year, he had the seventh highest ground ball percentage. Like, all the numbers are there for this kid, and he can put it together.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely somebody that I like more than some of the pitchers that I've seen going around him in drafts. It's interesting because another member of their staff, Jared Eichhoff, in the middle of last season, he seemed to be everybody who was looking at the peripherals kept leaning towards Eichhoff really being somebody that was just going to break out, and he was ready and he had all the stuff. I grouped him with Adam Conley in the middle of last year, and as the season went on, it just seemed like results never came from those peripherals. Is that the profile that you see in Jared Eichhoff? Is he somebody that you're targeting as a late gamer player or what?
I mean, I was pretty high on him as a sleeper last year, and I would have definitely liked to have seen more than obviously what we did. I mean, you're not impressed by a 91-mile-an-hour fastball that generates under a 5% swinging strike rate. The slider took a step back in the swinging strike rate as well, down 8%. Home run issues, they happen there. You were talking about how the ball comes out of Philly there. I gave up 19 of his 30 bombs at home, and it really didn't terrorize his ERA that bad. He still had a 3.32 ERA at home, giving up all those home runs, compared to a 4.04 on the road. And it's things like this that make me want to believe. I love Nola. And, I mean, I see the upside with Velasquez, but right now, in the NFBC list I'm looking at, I have Velasquez at 49, Eichhoff at 50, and Nola at 60, and I think I would go Nola, Velasquez, Eichhoff personally. What about you?
Oh, boy. I'll agree with you. There's something about Nola. I saw him pitch enough that I also liked him. He has sort of a mound presence to him when he was doing well last year. It just seems like somebody at some point is definitely going to turn the corner. So I will go with Nola as well. And I will be pretty happy if I end up having gambles that I like a little better than all three of these guys. I'm not as bullish on Nola as you are. I've heard about some lingering injury concerns there. Velasquez is a guy that just seems like a Houston team that, you know, that really needed starting pitching depth would have been a little more unwilling to part with them if he was going to have a chance at being a little more durable than what we've seen so far. They're not unviable risks. I tend to like different people in different parks on teams that score some more runs than the Phillies when I'm taking my pitching gambles.
Yeah, and real quick, Eichhoff is another guy that absolutely bottomed out the third time through the lineup. 221 first time, 219 the second time, 315 the third time through. We're going to talk about the bullpen here in a couple minutes because, I mean, we're not going to spend any time on Clay Buchholz, I don't think. I wish we could just create the narrative that it was the bullpen that kind of screwed these guys, but when you look at the inflated batting averages, you can't do that. And it definitely scares me.
Yeah, I don't blame you for that. I mean, you know, I will take a second to say that although I'm not a huge Clay Buchholz guy, and his inconsistency has been mind-numbingly difficult to even watch. Thankfully, I haven't owned him very often. As far as a one-year gamble, the one thing you can look for these guys is that, these one-year guys, at least you know that if they pitch well, if they seem to have any value leading up to the trade deadline, they could end up in a better position by the end of the season. I think that's about all you can really say for Buchholz, whose stuff seems to be trending in the wrong direction. This is their last year of control over Buchholz. So if Buchholz has anything left in the tank, if he wants to sign one big contract, he's got to come up with something this year. So I would at least keep him just on the radar. And if you do own Clay Buchholz at any point this year, make sure you're ready to drop him once things start to turn south.
Yeah.
Because if history has taught us anything, that should be it. You know, last year, as far as the Phillies bullpen was concerned, obviously, Genmar Gomez came out of the gates. He's a player that I owned in one of my leagues and was able to flip for somebody who was in desperate need of saves last year. By the end of the season, it looked like he fell out of favor pretty dramatically. And now we have what I consider to be an ultimate mishmash here, because the fantasy community wants Hector Neris to win the job because he was like a he was like a less publicized version of Ken Giles for much of the season last year. So that's who the public wants, but that would also boost what his arbitration rate will eventually be, which seems to be something that goes against a team that's in rebuild mode. And they got the ageless one, Joaquin Benoit, who's trying to do his best Jose Mesa impression at the end of his career, or pitching until he can go right into a retirement home. They have him, and then they also have Genmar Gomez, who had done the job last year. If you had to put your money on a relief pitcher from the Phillies, who would it be this year?
I like Hector Neris, so I'm going to be part of that bandwagon. 11.43. 11.5, we'll call it, K per nine last year. While the walks were definitely an issue, it's hard to argue with a 200 batting average against. And he stepped up in the second half, whereas Genmar Gomez absolutely fell apart. You're looking at an ERA over 8, a batting average over 350. He just absolutely shit the bed. And I know there's a silent clamoring for Joaquin Benoit to get some work after how awesome he was after going to Toronto last year. He had a .38 ERA for the Blue Jays over 25 appearances, and he had an ERA over 5 in 26 appearances as a Mariner. Now, granted, he, you know, had to, you know, I think he jumped a fence trying to get in the middle of a brawl and had a calf injury that, you know, ended his season. So if he's going to the nursing home, watch out. He's swinging a cane. But I know there's a portion of the fantasy baseball community that is behind Joaquin Benoit. But personally, I'm going with Hector Neris.
Yeah, well, Hector Neris is the guy with the skill set. So there's really no doubts about it. But now, not only do we have the arbitration thing that might actually hold people back, but now, of course, we're going to have the Terry Francona rationalization that, you know, that they want to use their best reliever at the most important time of the game, blah, 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 which, you know, which one of those factors is most important. Just really a matter of if Neris is the guy you want if he's going to get the job. There's no ands, ifs, or buts about it. I think it's fair to say that if you're in the zone where you have to take a Phillies closer to be bolstering your bullpen, you're either in a league where in an awfully deep league, like a draft and hold style, or you're in a league that with daily transactions where everybody who possibly closes is on somebody's bench. Because I think that we'll have some more information by the time the season comes along. It'll be one of those things where you'll have to watch the spring training and listen to the sound bites and try and get some information that I'm sure Friends with Fantasy Benefits will be more than on top of trying to figure out exactly who's going to win these jobs that still seem a little bit up in the air. I don't know if Genmar Gomez could come out firing and look really great and get the job back or not. That has yet to be seen. But his history says that that's an unlikely scenario. So we'll just kind of have to stand by as it comes to that. Now, I mean, you know, we don't want to, you know, overshoot our bounds here too much, because obviously Matt Thompson is our prospect guru. But J.P. Crawford is and Jorge Alfaro are definitely the first guys that you think of as the top-level Philly prospects. Are there some other guys that come to the tip of your tongue when you think about the Phillies farm system, brother?
Nick Williams, my boy Andrew Knapp. And, yeah, I think Matt's going to do a better job talking about it than we will. And I think that I've choked back enough vomit on the Phillies for one night.
Yeah, well, no one can blame you for that. But I think we helped give people a guide and maybe brought up some names that they had forgotten about because they've been mostly forgettable in the past. But maybe there's a hint that some good stuff will come out of them yet. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, why don't you tell everybody if you're working on anything special, Evan, and how you can be reached on Twitter, and let's stop this mind-numbing Phillies talk, and hopefully they can go back and listen to some of the other previews that might have a little more exciting names to talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. At EasyEv3, join me in the trolling of Mike Werner for his Vincent Velasquez pick, and give me something to write about. Give me something to do. You know, it's January. We're sitting around here. We had freezing rain here in Iowa today. I don't know what you were dealing with up in the Great White North, but it was, you know, it's shitty weather, and it's nice to be talking baseball, even if it is the Phillies.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, the unfortunate thing is that, you know, all these players, all these teams score runs, and all these teams win games. I mean, nobody goes, you know, nobody loses even, what, only 40, or nobody wins only 45 or 50 games for the most part. Everybody gets to the 60-win plateau. So they're going to have their outbursts, and it's going to be important in deeper leagues and important to keep your eye for filling your waiver wire picks, et cetera, on some of these guys. So I am Chuck Anderson, and I can be reached on Twitter at Just Chucking It. I've also gotten requests from people to be put on the email list for Just Chucking It, which is a sports editorial column that I do. And so if you want that, feel free to contact me on Twitter, and I'll get you on the email address. So for now, this is Evan and Chuck signing off on the Phillies. Let's see if they surprise us this year and keep doing crazy moves, and maybe they'll be a more exciting team to follow than we think. Signing off for now. Thanks for being with us.